everybody. This is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com, and it's also freely available as a download on iTunes. Today, I am excited to have a guest that is a active listener of the podcast. So I'm like really, really thrilled to have her on as a guest herself. So I want to say hey to Danette. Hey, how are you today?
I'm good, Pam. It's nice to talk to you today.
The same here. I mean, I feel like we've known each other for many years and, but I don't really know like your story. So I'm excited to learn about that today. So to get us started, could you introduce yourself to us? Tell us who you are and where you're from and what you do to stay busy.
Hi, I'm Danette Fitzgerald. I live near New Haven, Connecticut now, though I've lived around the Northeast in various places. At work, I'm an optical systems engineer. I currently build microscopes, and I used to build telescopes, and so some other things I do to keep busy. I'm actually a chapter leader with the NSA, with the National Stuttering Association. I'm on the board of my local alumni group, so planning events with them. I like to travel a lot, and then a whole bunch of other things. I like biking and film festivals and wineries and genealogy research and a whole bunch of other things.
Wow. Well, you are busy. I'm so happy that you found some time today in your schedule to meet up with us. So, of course, the first question I'm going to ask is, optical engineer, how the heck did you get involved in something like that?
I studied applied and engineering physics in college, and I liked physics and optics, and I wanted to go into optics, and I didn't really know what there was to do with optics until I randomly took an astronomy 101 class in college, and I was like, oh, this is an application of optics. So I interned at NASA during college.
Oh, wow.
And then I worked on some telescopes, and then I got into some companies that built telescopes after college, and then exploring different types of optics. So that's how I got into it.
Wow! So the telescopes and microscopes that you build are essentially for the application of astronomy, so for people to be able to look at stars and stuff?
So I have worked a little bit on the James Webb Space Telescope, which is the follow-on to the Hubble. I had a small part in that. That should launch in a few years. And so some looking up telescopes and some looking down telescopes. So for commercial telescopes and astronomy telescopes. And I actually got to work on a laser communication system that piggybacked on a telescope that launched to the moon, and communicates and sends data back to ground stations on Earth. And I got to attend that launch and watch it launch from 6 miles away.
Wow, that is really exciting. Now, yeah. Why did you choose this field in particular? I mean, was this something that you wanted to do from when you were a little girl?
not really. I was always good at math and science, but in middle school and stuff, I wanted to go into magazine editing. I wanted to be a psychologist. All different things, and people kept telling me, "But you're good at math and science." And until I took physics in 11th grade, then I finally realized, oh, that's something that I really like, that's fun, that I could do with the math and science fields.
So when you were in college, in your engineering programs, were you in the minority being a woman?
I think so. Actually, my year, so I had a very small major. Out of all the engineering majors, engineering physics was the smallest one. We had about 25 people in the class, but my year had like the most women, which was like 4 or 5 women.
Oh, wow.
At my jobs, I guess at my first couple jobs, there's always been more. Well, I mean, I'm definitely in the minority being a woman, but there's always been more women than you would expect to be there. Until this job, I kind of noticed, oh, there are a lot less women at this job, and I'm surrounded by guys. But I'm used to that, and I hardly ever notice until I think about it.
Yeah. Wow, that's really cool. That's really cool. So, did stuttering have anything to do with your vocational choices? Doesn't sound like it, but I usually ask that.
It actually didn't, and so I've always stuttered since I was a kid, but it was always pretty mild through growing up in college and after college, and it wasn't until I was in my mid 20s that I entered the working world and started working, it started to bother me a little more. And I started to see myself turning down opportunities at work to go to conferences and introduce myself and network, give presentations, talk on teleconferences. And I didn't want my stuttering to limit my career. So that's finally the first time I sought out speech therapy when I was 27, actually.
Wow. Yeah. You had never had it as a child?
No, because it was always pretty mild, so I knew that I stuttered, but it never bothered me much, and it wasn't that noticeable to other people.
Wow. So in the work world, you began to become a little bit more conscious of it. Were other people?
No, other people didn't notice. So I guess because entering the working world, I wanted to come off as competent and intelligent, and I felt like I might not because of the stuttering. But actually, when I sought out speech therapy for the first time and discovered the NSA and went to my first NSA conference, that's when I found out that I was what you call a covert stutterer. I had never heard that term before, but I went to a panel during my first NSA conference, and I was like, oh, that's what I am. I hide it well, and I know I stutter, but I might tell people I stutter, and they're like, no, you don't.
Because they never hear it.
Yeah. So I had a lot of avoidance behaviors of switching words or circumlocution or talking in circles, talking around the word, or adding a lot of fillers, and likes, pretending I forgot something or pretending I didn't know the answer.
Yeah.
Even if I did.
Yeah. God, I had the same experience as you when I went to my first NSA conference in 2006. I also went to that Covert Stuttering Exposed, it was called, panel. And I, too, was like, oh, my God, I never knew there was a word for what I'd been doing for so long, you know? Clearly stuttering, but never letting it out in front of people, or so I thought. You know, I also had a lot of denial. You know, I thought I was, you know, hiding it all the time and that no one knew. And then when I finally had my breakthrough and began to tell people that I stutter, you know, like I thought I was telling them this big secret, and they're like, we already knew that. You know, and that was really like telling for me. It's like, oh my God, like here I was all this time thinking I was like concealing this like big major part of myself. And people closest to me knew already, but just didn't say anything because I never said anything. you know? So yeah. was that kind of your experience at all?
Not really. I guess I had hit it so well that I would tell people and they would fight back and they would be like, no, you don't stutter. You're fine. Or for years after the first few years after I discovered the NSA and became involved with it, and I might tell people I'm going to the conference or I'm going to a monthly meeting, and they would be like, why? You don't stutter. And I wanted them to know that I stutter. I was like, but I do. I want you to know that.
It's kind of funny, right? Like you almost get defensive about it. Like, yeah, I really do. I swear to God, I do.
And you like, feel like you feel like you have to prove it to people.
Exactly. And then, you know, as you know, from having discovered the whole covert thing, sometimes you feel like you don't belong. Like, you don't stutter enough to be in the stuttering community, but you also don't feel fluent enough to be in the fluent world. So it's kind of like that, like, little upside-down place where you're just not sure. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly how it feels.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't the upside-down, like, from Stranger Things or something?
Yes, I just finished the last season of Stranger Things recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, I actually started watching it the first season, and I watched like maybe the first 5 episodes, and then I lost interest.
Really?
Yeah. And so I haven't watched, you know, the rest of season 1, and obviously not season 2 and 3. I think they're out to now, right?
Yeah, season 3 came out on July 4th while we're at the conference, so I started that after I got back.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, wow. So you were at the conference, the NSA conference this year that was just last month in Fort Lauderdale. But before that, you had also attended another conference as well, right?
Yeah. So this year was actually my ninth NSA conference. I discovered the NSA in 2010. So for the first time, I went to the International Stuttering Association conference in Iceland.
Wow. That must have been so exciting.
Yeah. That was very similar, but very different from the NSA conferences that I'm used to. There are a lot less people than the NSA conferences gets, about 600 to 1,000 people, and the international conference got about less than 200 people, I think. So there was the same type of workshops and stuff, and choosing between workshops in each time slot, and some social activities outside of that, and I guess a more cohesive group because there were less people, and it was interesting to explore sites in a different country, and they took us on a little trip to see the major sites in the country, the geothermal things.
Yeah. It looked really cool. I had actually been registered to attend the Iceland conference and even had a workshop approved, and unfortunately I had to withdraw at kind of the last moment, but I was fortunate enough to be able to get my registration money back. It just didn't work out. I'm dealing with some other circumstances that just would have made it really difficult to attend 2 conferences back to back, and they were back to back, right? Like they were like a week apart.
Yeah, I noticed you posting something on Facebook that you were planning to come and then you couldn't, and I felt so bad. It would have been nice to see you there. And I was actually debating about whether to go. I really wanted to, but being back to back, it's very difficult to take the 2 weeks in a row off of work, and you feel guilty, you know, saying you're going to be gone for 2 weeks from work. And I actually went back and forth on it until the day the early bird registration ended. And that morning I was still 50-50. And then I was like, just do it. Life is short.
That's the case. Life is short. But I was having some employment, issues, and, actually I, was laid off from my job. So there was just no way that I could spend that amount of money, with uncertainty about income looming. So I knew I had to go to the NSA conference, and the Iceland conference was more of a want.
Yeah.
So, but it was important to me. I really did want to go because I just came off and finished a 3-year term as a board member of the International Stuttering Association. So I had wanted to get to one while I was still on the board, but, didn't work out, and hopefully I'll be able to go to another one.
Yeah. Yeah, that is understandable. And I understand where you're coming from, because I've been laid off twice in my career. Mm-hmm. I understand that feeling and the unsureness of what your next position is going to be. And
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And like right now, like feeling like I'm just kind of like I'm out of sorts because I don't have a real schedule, you know, and like, I'm, yeah. You know, like my sleep is like off because I'm not getting up at 5 a.m. like I had been. And so, you know, so it just feels like an off time for me. But, you know, I'll bounce back because this is actually the third time that it's happened in my career, which spans a little longer than yours. So okay. But still having experience, having been laid off, doesn't really make it any easier.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, every time is different. Yeah.
Right. And you're in kind of like a different stage of life at that point. And so this actually came as a bigger surprise to me because it was like the last thing that I expected to happen at like this later stage in my career. So, but, you know, people always say you'll land on your feet and you'll find an opportunity that's actually better. And I believe that. It's just like right now I'm not seeing it.
Yeah.
So have you always been in the engineering field?
Yeah. So I've always been in the optical engineering field. So I'm the optical end of things, working with mirrors and lenses and putting optical systems together. More on the back end of like testing optical systems after they've been put together, and do they meet requirements and what needs to be adjusted to make them meet requirements a little better. So right now I'm actually in the manufacturing world. Microscopes, what I build now, are a little different than telescopes in that when you're building a telescope, you're really only ever building one of something. But in the commercial, like manufacturing industry, we're selling a bunch of something. So there's an incentive to make the process better and automate the process more. So I'm enjoying doing that. And actually, in a couple weeks, I'm actually going to a work conference to give my second conference presentation.
Ooh.
So. two years ago, I went to my first conference and gave my first conference presentation ever. And so I have a second one coming up in a week and a half.
Where is it?
It's going to be in San Diego.
Oh, wow. That is such a nice area of California too. Wow. And yeah. What will you be presenting on?
So I'll be presenting on showing 3 years of data that we have on using this technique to calibrate microscopes trying to show how stable this new method is.
Oh, okay. And the audience obviously will be very familiar with what you're talking about and will have an interest in it, right?
Yeah.
That always makes it helpful when like the audience like wants the information. Cause like if I was going to be listening to that, I'd be like, oh my God, like what the hell is she talking about?
So
do you let people know that you stutter when you do these presentations? I mean, you've only done one other, but how do you handle that?
Yeah, so advertising about my stutter is always on a case by case basis. In some situations it's more worth it to do advertising and in some it's not. So I actually haven't at I didn't at my last conference presentation. I don't think I will here because it's only You only have 20 minutes, including 5 minutes for questions. So it's really only a 15-minute presentation. And so I always struggle with talking. Like, I do sometimes bring up my stuttering to people and stuff, but I always struggle with making it about me versus making it about, like, the content of what the conversation's about. And some people are more receptive to it and appreciative that I might have mentioned it, and some people are like, okay, so what?
Right.
Yeah,
I can relate to that too, because in my last job, one of the things I had to do with high school students was make a lot of presentations. And I also struggled with that dilemma, do I or don't I, you know, because it's not about me and I'm not there to talk about stuttering. I'm there to talk about something else. And especially because my audience was always high school students, you know, there was always that risk that, you know, they'd be kids and react like jerks anyway, you know, and not necessarily because of stuttering, but because they're jerks at that age, you know? So, I too, like, always, like, you know, wondered, should I or shouldn't I? Cause it really doesn't matter. But I know the stakes are higher in a workplace, and I would feel so intimidated by just having a 15-minute presentation. Like, I was in Toastmasters for a number of years, and I always had a hard time keeping within the time limit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But this is your second opportunity at it. Was the first one also just like a short presentation?
Yeah, yeah. It was the same. It was the same length. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And I find what works for me is practicing a lot, like every night for the last 2 weeks before the presentation. Like I go over it myself alone and practice and get it more memorized, because if I don't like know it by heart, I'll blank up there and that'll make me nervous and that'll end up making me stutter more or stutter in a more self-conscious way. But if I know it and I'm confident that I know it, I feel like I'll speak better.
Yeah. And is that important to you to speak better in a work setting?
I guess that,
that's a hard question, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I've gone to speech therapy, on and off, since I first sought it out. Mm-hmm. And, at first I was completely comfortable with telling people that I stutter, but not with stuttering in front of someone. Like, and I'm still
like the defense of, yes, I really stutter comes in, right?
Yeah. And I still struggle with that a little bit, but I've let it out a lot more. I've noticed through speech therapy, when I have the confidence that even if I stutter, I can get through the word, and I don't have the panic that I used to have before speech therapy of will this word ever come out? I have no idea. So I don't mind stuttering if I know that, okay, after a few bounces or after a prolongation, I'm going to get the word out, then I'm more comfortable with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were at the two conferences, so you were out of work for 2 weeks because of that. So did you tell colleagues that you attended two stuttering conferences?
Yeah, so every year I use the NSA conference as an opportunity to, because everyone wants to know, oh, where are you going for July 4th or for your vacation, and it's a good opportunity to tell them where I'm going, and you definitely see some people are more interested than others, and like at the lunch table we'll ask questions about it and stuff. Yeah, so it's always nice when someone is interested and wants to learn about it or wants to ask questions.
Yeah. And you said at the beginning that you're one of the things that keeps you busy is that you're a chapter leader for the NSA in New Haven. Do you talk about that at all with colleagues or friends?
Oh yeah, like sometimes I'll mention it if I'm leaving work and that's where I'm going. I guess I don't mention it as much as the conference, but it does come up sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So would you consider yourself covert anymore?
No, I think I would consider myself a recovering covert.
I asked that purposely because I remember either you saying that or reading it in your bio from the conference. And so define that. Like, what does that mean to be a recovering covert?
So instead of like a lot of the avoidances that I used to use most of the time, that I still use sometimes, but such as like using synonyms and not saying the word I want to say, but saying a synonym, or talking in circles instead of like being clear and like saying just the words I want to say, I'll add so many more words and fluff to like, and like instead of ordering the food that I want at a restaurant, like, oh, I can't say cucumber when I'm getting my Subway sandwich, so I won't get cucumber in my sandwich. Or I remember like ordering a sandwich and I really wanted the provolone cheese, but provolone was too hard to say, so I got cheddar cheese. instead of doing things like that, even if I'm going to stutter on a word, I'll say the word that I want to say. And what really helped me the most, like at the beginning of when I started going to speech therapy, was like, it's personal to everyone, but what works for me was learning how your vocal system like makes each sound and each letter, like your tongue and your mouth and your vocal cords, and how they produce like a K sound or a P sound, or and really understanding what it's doing. So when you do get stuck on a letter, you know what you can do to get out of that. Just having that knowledge helps. Because before that, I would get into a blind panic of, I don't know if this is ever going to come out. So that helps me have the confidence to say the actual word that I want to say, because I know that there's a way. I have a toolbox of ways that I can get that word out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So recovering covert means that you're not hiding the fact that you stutter, but you're making conscious choices about managing it.
Yeah. I guess making conscious choices about managing it. Letting it out more and not trying to actively hide it, and associating with being a stutter and being confident in that association.
Yeah. So what kind of therapy have you been doing? Like it sounds a little bit like avoidance reduction, but when you started describing, you know, like the mechanics of speech, it sounds a little bit like fluency shaping also.
So I think it's more like stuttering modification.
Oh.
And like getting the toolbox of like every speech therapist I've had calls it different terminology, but prolongation, slides, easy onsets, light contact, things like that, and bounces instead of hard blocks. I've always wanted to try avoidance reduction therapy. I've been at the conferences, I've been to some of the workshops about that, and all the people in Maryland who go to Vivian Siskin for that therapy. That sounds great and something that would really work for me. But I don't think that's available here. That's the only place I know that's available.
Yeah. But they do teletherapy though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah. But you started to say voluntary stuttering and then you pulled back on that. So do you do that ever? What do you think of voluntary?
So I know when I was first introduced to it, I was very resistant to it, and it took me some, I kind of saw the benefits of that. but it took me some time to be able to do that. And I think that's good for desensitization for a covert stutterer. One of my favorite workshops at the conference now is the advertising outing. They actually bring you out to the streets and you talk to strangers on the street or talk to employees in a store asking various questions, and use whatever type of stuttering you want to. So I'll use pretty more severe voluntary stuttering just to see people's reactions, and because a lot of the reason that covert stutterers hold back so much is because we have these imagined reactions of people and we don't want to experience that. Right. But when you learn in real life that people's reactions in reality are not as bad as you expect that they would be, that's really cool. I remember using some severe blocks and stutters in that workshop, and people that I was talking to didn't even flinch and looked at me exactly as if I was talking fluently. And I was like, wow, people don't react as much as that. So, so voluntary stuttering helps with that, even if I do stutter, it's not the end of the world and it'll still feel just fine and people will react just fine.
Wow. So did you do that one in Fort Lauderdale? Did you do the advertising stuttering?
I didn't do it this year in Fort Lauderdale because there's always so many workshops at one time to choose between, and I've done it the past couple of years, and then there was something else at the same time. It was a toss up, and I was like, oh, which one? And I think I went to the other one.
No, the reason that I asked is that, you know, the Fort Lauderdale area, there didn't really seem to be a lot of opportunity or like a lot of space where you could go and actually run into strangers unless they did it on the beach, which is the only thing I can think of where they might have done it.
I don't know what they did this year, but a couple of years ago we were in an area where there wasn't much around, so we ended up making phone calls instead. We ended up making phone calls to businesses to talk about ordering food or making a reservation or something.
Okay. So you just kind of like stayed in the workshop room and just everybody used their cell phones?
Yeah. And we like split into groups and you'd like one person in the little group would use their cell phone. So you'd hear what they were doing and then you might get a turn if you wanted to.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I think I'd be even more self-conscious about that, like having other people, you know, like hear my reaction. Because like sometimes that's actually one of the things that, even though I too don't consider myself covert and anymore, sometimes at work, if I was answering the phone and I stuttered on the phone, sometimes I would feel a little self-conscious if I knew that coworkers could hear that. So I wasn't so much worried about stuttering on the phone with the person on the other end of the line, but more so worrying about, oh my God, what are my coworkers thinking if they hear that, you know? And it's like, oh, like, I'd like to tell myself that I'm over that, but sometimes I'm not really.
Yeah, I have that same feeling with talking on the phone, where even though it's difficult in any situation, it's less difficult when I'm home alone on the phone than when I know other people can overhear me on the phone. And in the past at work, I used to like be less efficient and like, oh, you can just call this company and ask your question. No, I'll send an email and I'll wait 6 hours to get the response.
right, exactly. Avoidance crutches, right?
Yeah.
So, circling back to the international conference, you said that it was like pretty much the same as the NSA conference, except just on a smaller scale. But some of the international people that you met from other countries, was their level of acceptance of stuttering the same or different than us as Americans?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
I wonder if you could tell, like, yeah.
Yeah. There were definitely different levels of support in different countries, where you'd see a lot more people from some countries, and some countries were completely missing in attendance. And then I forget which countries and which, but some had like more like local groups and support, and then some people were pretty isolated. Mm. And then one thing we were thinking about, most of the other people from other countries, English was their second language, so they had to deal with both of those at once, with mm-hmm. using a different language and the stuttering. Yeah, I'm not sure about the acceptance. I mean, all the people I met since I guess it was a biased population, because all the people I met were there at the conference, and a lot of the people in Europe, they go to a lot more conferences than us in the U.S. because it's a smaller area. They all go to each other's conferences. They're all just like we'd go to another state. They're going to other countries and they all know each other. Especially in Northern Europe and Scandinavia.
I kind of got that sense too, that like it's no big deal to go from England to Spain to Germany because they're all like close.
Yeah.
So was there any one common theme that like people at the international conference seemed to share? Besides stuttering, obviously.
That's a tough question. I'm not sure.
Was like everybody like pretty open to like meeting each other and wanting to make new friends from other countries?
Oh yeah, people were definitely pretty open. I talked with a lot of different people, had conversations with people. When we went on a bus tour around the country, I sat with a Dutch guy and we got to know each other, and we went on an excursion to a tomato farm one of the nights. I sat next to some other people from other countries and got to know them. And then every day, so they would give us a buffet breakfast and lunch that was included in the conference. And so every day I'd sit with a different group of people. I'd sit down at a table with some people and meet them and talk with them. And then at the workshops, I might sit next to a different person and get to talk to them. So yeah, people were very open to meeting each other from different countries and talking about their experiences.
Yeah. That's the one thing that I think, I really like about the smaller scale conferences, because you can actually talk to, meet and get to know a lot of people. Whereas the NSA conferences with 600 plus people, sometimes you don't even see one of your friends or someone that you want to connect with, right? You never run into them. And that always makes me sad, like when I don't see somebody that I really wanted to be sure to, you know, just maybe just have a 5-minute conversation with, and I never even see them.
Yeah. And then what was nice about the international conference was the fact that they included breakfast and lunch at the hotel. Everybody was there. But the NSA conference, the lunches are difficult because by the time people decide who they're going to lunch with and where they're going to go to some restaurant offsite. It's very hard to make it back to the afternoon workshops on time. So it's always a sacrifice between going to lunch and being social or making it to the afternoon workshop. That was nice with lunch included. You just go upstairs, everyone's there together, you get your meal, and then you go down to your afternoon workshop right on time.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I've been to 5 or 6 friends conferences, which also are on a much smaller scale than the NSA. And that was one of the things that I really liked too. Like they build into the conference atmosphere that sharing meals together is part of the, you know, part of the experience. So friends always stays at a hotel where the hotel offers free breakfast. And then friends would provide lunch as each day as part of the experience. And then they actually also do hospitality rooms at night. So like you really got a chance to talk with most of the people there because everybody's in the same place at the same time. And I think that, I think that's one thing that like the larger conferences obviously miss, because we just don't, we're not given those opportunities. And you're right. I think they're, it's always so hard to pick a workshop because there's always like four or five really good ones at the same time. And it's like, oh, how do you decide? And yeah, after lunch, you always see people coming into the workshops late. Yeah. So, you've listened to a lot of the podcasts and you know a lot of women who stutter. So, is there like a one piece of advice that you feel really proud that you've that's helped you in your journey with stuttering that you'd like to share with other women that are either just starting their journey or are listening today?
Let me think. I think to like to find what because I know it's very individual, so to find what works for you in terms of speech therapy or even not speech therapy, just acceptance. Because I know a different type like works for everyone. Like I like my speech therapists have tried also you mentioned fluency shaping. I've tried some of that with me and that didn't really work for me because I felt as a covert stutterer that just changes the way I speak and removes intonation and personality from my voice. Finding something that works for you and makes you more comfortable in your speech, because what's important is what's important in communication is is effective communication and getting what's in your head to someone else and not the way you say it, but the fact that you feel like you got what you wanted to convey to someone out. So that's what's most important. So if you can find a way to do that and feel comfortable doing that, that's what's critical.
Wow, that is a nice way to put it, and it's also like kind of a nice way to wind down here. Now I do have one final question. Were you nervous
Okay.
about doing this podcast?
No, I don't think I was nervous. So I know you had asked me years ago to do this podcast and I was like, no, I don't know what to expect, so I can't do that yet. I'm not ready. And it took many years to finally be like, I'm ready now. And I'm usually an over preparer, so I'm like, I have to think about what I'm going to say. I have to write some notes, but I didn't over prepare too much. I just wrote because I knew your first question, so I wrote a little notes of like what I would say to that, and then just let it flow, have a conversation, and yeah, no, I wasn't nervous. I don't think.
And we're winding down now. So how are you feeling as we wrap up your, is this your first podcast?
A couple of years ago, I actually was on Danielle Rossi's
Okay.
podcast. Stuttering is cool.
Yeah. So
It,
you were experienced then doing this.
yeah, that was a number of years ago. So I it's been long enough that I forget what that was like. So it's new for me again. And I feel good. I feel like we had a good conversation and talked about a lot of different things. And yeah, and I think the conversation flowed pretty well.
Yeah, I'm really happy with it too, and I'm just like so excited to really have gotten to know you a little better, and I feel very honored and privileged that you're here today because for those of you that don't know, when Danette listens to one of the women's podcasts, she writes a little like note to the person that she's listening to and then tags me as well, and it's kind of like a thank you, and that's really cool. I really appreciate that you do that. So to have you like be here finally, I'm really hoping that somebody does that for you too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
Yeah, I'm sorry.
yeah. Oh, I was gonna say, yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad that you like that I do that. I like every time I listen to a podcast of someone that I know, I like to mention it and let them know that someone's listening.
Yeah, and that's the reason why I really like it because like, when I first started doing this years ago, and the same thing with my blog, like people would actually leave comments on the blog. Well, now that we're so much more into social media, people will make a comment on Facebook if I've put the podcast there or shared the link there. Whereas there really isn't ever any comments on the blog or on the actual podcast episode anymore. So like sometimes I am like, wow, is anybody listening?
Yeah.
So to get that, it's feedback, and feedback is valuable, and feedback is a gift. So yeah, it's like really appreciate it. It does help to know that there's somebody out there listening because it gives me the motivation to continue doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me just say thank you so much for being a guest today. You're really inspiring, and like you can really see the trajectory of your journey, from when you first found the NSA 10 years ago. To where you're at now. I'm so happy that you were a guest today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me as a guest.
Yeah, it was great. And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.